Okay, Wally, number one is the volcano in the Galapagos Island. Number two is the Kilauea volcano in Hawaii. And number three is the Taal volcano in Luzon in the Philippine Islands. And number four is Mount Arino in Costa Rica. And the lat is 9 degrees north, longitude 84 degrees west. And the number three, the Taal volcano in the Philippines, the lat is 14 degrees north, longitude 120 degrees east.
Well, gentlemen, the progress of Apollo 7, I think, has surprised all of us. It's gone amazingly well up to this point. Henry Simmons, what do you think of this first week of this first manned Apollo mission?
I've been very impressed at the mechanical reliability of the systems aboard, and also impressed by the incongruity that it's the astronauts with their colds who I think are giving the ground the most concern on this fight, while the machinery, the hardware, is working very nearly perfectly.
Harry Pease?
Don't you think, though, that the mere fact that the astronauts who and cosmonauts, too, have been sort of expensive attachments for complicated machines up to now can get up there and sniffle just like us ordinary folks, is combined with television to humanize the whole business of spaceflight as it never has been before?
No question about that.
I think so, too. The fact that the treatment for the astronauts in space in their weightless condition, even in the pure oxygen environment, is the same as for those of us here for the common cold.
Take two aspirins and call me in the morning.
The word of the Dr. Barry. How about the mechanical systems? There seems to have been plenty of extra care for this flight, don't you think, Henry?
Yes, I think compared with the Gemini program, Apollo, in its very first manned mission, has shown a degree of reliability which I find perfectly amazing. There have been problems with battery charging, with an evaporator on the primary coolant circuit, but it seems to me that the ground controllers have a grasp and a comprehension of these problems which goes beyond anything I saw in Gemini.
Well, one of the things that seems to influence this is that these Mercury and Gemini flights were short duration affairs, and the spacecraft went up, came down, then the engineers began to investigate problems, then the next crew would try out the fixes in space. And this mission has lasted long enough so that the flight crew can tinker with things in orbit, and most of these difficulties have been solved or explained, at least, while the mission continued. This may be why this is turning out the way it is. They've already finished in a week of flight something like 85% of the flight objectives, and this may well be the first crew that ever came down with a perfectly clean slate as far as its assignments were concerned.
This is Wally Schirra's way of flying, at least if his record in the past has anything to do with it.
That's certainly true. I would suspect that if there's any concern at all, it's about the health of the astronauts, their morale, how they're feeling. And the only question I would have would concern the sharpness of the crew. And I think so far, though, even under the burden of these colds, they've gone about their work remarkably well.
The Saturn rocket system. Oh, excuse me, Harry.
Well, I was going to say one of the interesting things about this flight is that probably the worst problem they've had and the one that has defied solution is not with their extremely complicated machinery, but just a plain old business of foggy windows.
Now, this is something we've had all the way through Mercury and Gemini, and now the same problem with Apollo. There seems to have been no solution thus far to this residue forming on the outside of the windows. Have you heard anything about them solving this?
No, I haven't, and some of the problems have to do with residue and fogging occurring in between the panes of glass on these very complicated windows, and I'm not sure there is any solution to these types of problems. At least none have been found yet.
Out of five windows, one of them is completely fogged up, the one in the spacecraft hatch, I believe.
Yes.
The Saturn 1B launch was exemplary, too. Would you say that the same care and ongoing technology that we apply to the spacecraft up there in orbit was present there at the Cape during launch and countdown?
Well, I don't think there's any question but that the Grissom tragedy keyed everybody up to really try hard on this one. And the Saturn 1B is a third generation vehicle too. So we have a combination of technology plus extreme emotional motivation to get this one just right. And that's the way it worked.
Launch officials, I believe, said that the countdown and preparation for launch on that Saturn 1B was the cleanest, I think that was their word, the cleanest they'd ever seen. Do you concur?
And the word from the Cape, incidentally, is that the Saturn 501 for Apollo 8...
503?
Or 503, I'm sorry, is just as smooth. A very, very clean bird.
And this will be the third flight for the big Saturn V rocket coming up in December. I believe that the thrust of your comments there, then, gentlemen, is that this is the third generation of spacecraft and rocket systems, and that possibly engineers, technicians, scientists have well taken advantage of what they've learned in the preceding Mercury and Gemini program.
I think there's no question about that. Now, if only we could find a cure for the common cold, we'd be in very good shape.
It's a good summary, technically and medically. It is true that this is what this step in the program is supposed to be. We've determined that man can fly in space. Now we're putting him to work in space, and it's going well so far.
Thank you very much. Henry Simmons of the Newsweek magazine Washington Bureau and Harry Pease, science editor of the Milwaukee Journal. This is Rhett Turner in Houston. 6:30, that's fine. That's good.
Jack, on that run, we ran 16 millimeter movie camera at one frame a second for a strip map from the west coast of LA through the hurricane. Ran the pentatonic film with red and green filters from the west coast through El Paso. Ran the SO-121 from El Paso through the hurricane, including Houston. And achieved landmark tracking on El Paso. I don't have Don fill you in on that.
Okay, real fine, Wally.
I don't know, we were doing nothing.
You should have seen it up here. Looked like squirrels in a cage.
Raj.
Log this, Jack. Frame 142 is where we completed taking pictures of the hurricane at this time. I can't quite read my MET here. And 3-1. And just prior to that, we took three or four shots of the Houston area, which is wide open, the whole area down there.
Clear lake, everything stood out like a bell.
Okay, copy that.
Magazine S.
That's probably one of our best passes today.
It almost made us homesick.
Roger.
We plan to drop in a few days.
Roger, understand.
The activity tomorrow will primarily be aimed towards burn 5, which is a major burn in the flight test. The burn will be slightly over 1 minute duration. It's intended to accomplish a number of things. It will start off as a GNN control burn, and then about halfway through it, there will be what is called a manual thrust vector control takeover. That is, Wally will turn the T-handle, which takes control of the engine from the stick, assisted with the rate gyros, as a test. This is one of the failover modes available in control of the SPS engine. The other thing we're going to try to accomplish with this burn is to get a long burn of this engine, and to get a long burn in such a fashion as to uncover two point sensors approximately at the beginning of the burn and approximately at the end, so that we would have the maximum amount of information on how much fuel it took to accomplish a given amount of delta V. That being as accurate a determination as we can get in flight of the specific impulse of this particular engine. We'll then take that specific impulse data and compare it with the pre-flight test in order to give ourselves some assurance that we're getting the kind of impulse in flight out of these engines that we saw on the ground and predicted for in flight. We have a number of other tests tomorrow. The passive thermal control test, we're going to run a mode of that where we simply line the spacecraft up and let it start a roll and see what the motion gets to be. It'll probably corkscrew up a little bit, and we're trying to find out how rapidly that kind of motion would develop and then how much fuel it would take to dampen. This is considered to be one of the passive thermal control modes which we might use when we fly the command service module to the moon and when it's exposed, for example, to sunlight for long periods of time. We're also going to do a thermal soak on the SPS. We're going to point the nose of the spacecraft at the sun and let the back end, where all the plumbing and the tanks for the service propulsion engine are, we're going to let that stuff cool down just to see what the thermal characteristics of that area of the spacecraft are in a controlled environment, that is, in the shade.
Hey, you're right. Tropical Storm Gloria is due east of Luzon about this time, so you probably saw it going by there.
Roger, that's what we call a Pacquiao then, right?
Roger.
That's two for Apollo 7 now, huh?
That's correct.
Houston, you have a little high cirrus today, but look generally wide open.
Roger, concur.
We see no thunderstorms in the Gulf, none to the west of you. There is a band of weather approximately on the San Antonio area. Another band over towards New Orleans.
Roger, thank you.
I think it's been an outstanding mission, the first spacecraft of a kind, and we've been up there about 9 days. I haven't stopped to add it up. But we completed probably 85% to 90% of the objectives that were laid on to be accomplished for the mission. As Glenn indicated, there's some shuffling of the flight plan tomorrow to essentially complete it. And I think we're all surprised, pleasantly so, at the way this thing is going. The systems are operating very well. The things that aren't, I think, are reasonably well understood at this time. And as far as the crew themselves are concerned, I think watching them operate on TV, you probably get a pretty good impression of what their attitude is at this point. I think they had a few bad days there early on when they all had colds and weren't feeling so great, and they probably feel about the same way you do when you've got a cold. But I think everybody's feeling pretty good now, and it's looking like a real good mission.
Using the phrases that you have used of activity schedules, of mission objectives, it sounded as though you were saying 100%. Were you?
Yes.
You're accomplishing 100% of mission objectives,
yes,
and activity schedule.
To put it in engineer's terms, yes.
Congratulations.
100%. Well, let me answer that this way. First of all, they're not irritable.
They are?
I don't know whether you heard them this morning. They sounded fine. They've had their moments of
I guess being a little put out, and so have we on the ground. But there's gonna, I think, any time you put three guys in a spacecraft for 10.8 days in a small area and confine them, I think you're going to find a few little displays of, let's call it temper, I think Paul Haney called it yesterday. We get them in the control center. Once again, I'm trying to make that rationale. I've been working midnight to eight shifts now for about 10.8 days, and so has Ben, and so has Charlie. And we have our moments, and I don't think you ought to make too much of it.
Gentlemen, the flight is drawing to a successful conclusion here. Everything has gone remarkably well, I think. Harry Pease, how would you assess this first manned Apollo mission, Apollo 7?
Well, I think the remarkable thing about it, the thing that nobody could have forecast in advance, is that these people are going to touch down with a flight plan that is completely carried out. Every engineering test that was scheduled will have been run off, and some will have been repeated. This, as far as I know, has never happened before in an American space flight. Of course, we don't know about the other people.
It's a good spacecraft, in other words.
It's a good spacecraft flown by an excellent crew.
Jack Jones?
Well, I certainly agree with Harry. The thing that I think some of us have lost touch with here is comparing it with the earlier flights. This has been strictly an engineering test flight, and as such, the spacecraft has performed remarkably well. There's been some controversy in this thing, but it's apparently it's involved personalities and involves little things like food and unimportant items which don't really contribute or aren't the strictly important factors in the way the spacecraft performs. So it seems to me this thing almost has to go down as 100% success.
Actually, a lot of the problem has arisen from the fact that it's gone so well that they've been able to add items to the flight plan that they hadn't expected to, and the crew has complained a couple of times about unplanned events. This has given rise to some of this controversy.
Yeah, I think these young controllers sort of surprised the guys up there and gave them a couple extra things that they hadn't expected, and maybe they think, well, maybe they should have been briefed on this a little bit ahead of time.
You mentioned young controllers there, Jack. Harry, you had some thoughts on our young flight control crew over there in the Mission Control Center, didn't you?
Well, yes. After all, Captain Shiraz is 45 years old, and he's been in the space program since its inception. He's used to working with Chris Kraft, who I imagine is known to a lot of your listeners, as a voice at least.
About the same age, too, and
yeah,
contemporary of Shiraz.
That's right. And suddenly, Wally is facing this thing of being directed by men 15 years younger than he, and he may just have a feeling that these young fellows don't have the same handle on the situation that the old-timers did.
I wonder to what extent that just a plain old bad cold might have affected his temperament there in a few of the disgruntled remarks we heard Sunday.
Well, I don't really think they did. I think Wally is just acting like the salty old Navy captain that he is. He's got a ship and a crew there, and he's taking his responsibility, and he's sounding off when his boys are imposed on. He thinks Don Isley is being forced to do things that he shouldn't do, so he sounds off. He's sort of a captain watching out for the welfare of his crew.
Well, let's at least review what they've been asked to do. Isley was asked to do some navigation exercises, which involved maneuvering the spacecraft. And Wally, as the most conservative of all of the pilots in the program so far, conservative as far as use of fuel, felt that some of these maneuvers were unnecessary and used up too much fuel. You concur? Is this fair?
Yeah, that seems to be right. Uh-huh.
And so then we got some of the captain's salty remarks back to the flight controllers there on Sunday.
Yeah, but did you notice that the things that he's making salty remarks about are strictly operational? When they must be in pretty good humor up there, and that's one reason I'm inclined to discount the cold thing. Some of their television shows have been very funny and obviously have had considerable preparation, and the crew can't possibly be sitting up there beefing and grouchy and yet have this much fun on a television pass.
Well, they certainly were in rare good humor on Monday morning for that last of the television presentations.
That's certainly true, and some of the earlier ones were even when the tension seemed to be higher, I think the earlier shows were even better.
Jack, what do you feel that the successful progress of this engineering test flight, what do you feel that it bodes for future missions and the speed of the program?
Well, I don't see how they can speed up the program, but it certainly looks to me like this certainly won't delay it. It surprises me, having gone through a lot of the other flights, to see this thing come off on time and without a hitch, and since they managed to do that, it looks like maybe they got a good chance to keep up on their schedule and maybe make the moon next year.
Harry?
One of the things that the long duration of this flight has made possible is in-flight correction of engineering bugs, where in the short earlier flights, the spacecraft would come down with something wrong and they'd have to make a fix on the ground and then test again in flight. I think that on this particular mission, they've worked out most of these things. They're going to come down with very few open items that require change before they go again. This doesn't mean that they can stint on the preparations, the planning, the testing, and that sort of thing, but there isn't any major equipment redesign called for, apparently.
Well, there is a built-in time schedule that cannot be crimped or shortened any more than at present. For instance, it's impossible for Apollo 8 to get off the ground before mid-December, isn't it?
Well, that's what they tell us, and I don't see how they could, considering all the preparations that they've got. But looking at the things they found wrong with this, it doesn't seem like it'd be too much trouble to load a couple extra meals in. That's what Wally was complaining about this morning, or to change the flight plan, which is another one of his complaints. But there doesn't seem to be any major changes that they have to make in view of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks pretty good right now.
Harry, you have any other thoughts on the flight?
Well, I questioned Bill Schneider, the Apollo program director, about this very point just a couple of days ago. And he said that they might pick up a couple of days, but they couldn't possibly pick up enough time to shoot late in November, which they would have to do to get the proper lighting on the moon for the photography they hope to do. So I think we can figure that the Christmas season is the earliest possible.
Well, it's been an amazingly open flight as far as our coverage here has been, hasn't it?
Well, this is one thing that maybe we ought to get into context. I know as a newspaper man, you're always looking for controversy or something different, and it's only when things go along according to plan and it's a real smooth flight, why it gets pretty boring sometime in our view. And so there's been a lot of talk about this controversy between the guys in the spacecraft and the guys on the ground. But let's face it, if it wasn't an open flight, if it wasn't being done the open way it is, why, we wouldn't have heard about it. So this is something that's pretty good to think about.
I heard from Paul Haney that the microphones have actually been open, and we've been getting these comments from the spacecraft as they're made. There's not even a tape delay, except in situations where there's a press briefing going on or something like that and the PA system is tied up. But they've been giving us the whole conversation as it occurs, and this is something that is unlikely to happen elsewhere. I think if some government agency were in some other country were preparing a report on the flight, there'd be a great deal that would not have come out.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. This has been an interesting discussion. Harry Pease, science editor of the Milwaukee Journal, and Jack Jones of the Dayton, Ohio Daily News. This is Rhett Turner in Houston.
In summary, the performance of the spacecraft has been exceedingly excellent, and I hope that message gets made very loud and clear, but the performance of the vehicle and the performance of the team of people that made that vehicle what it is today is one that ought to be given some share of the excitement in this flight.
Apollo 7 goes in my book as a perfect mission. In my experience, this is the first space operation that's accomplished more than 100% of its pre-planned objectives. Our official count is that we accomplished 101% of our intended objectives. The abnormalities that occurred, which were tracked and reported every day, were minimal, and there are only two that I think we have significant work to do before we've satisfied ourselves with the readiness for our next mission. These are the AC power bus dropout that was reported, and a full understanding of our battery and charger situation. There is a third that was discussed, namely we have some work to do on our aeromedical harness. We were able during this mission to check the spacecraft in all of its planned and all of its planned modes, or its normal modes of operation, and in all of its backup and redundant modes of operation. I think that either by plan or fortune, we checked everything on that spacecraft and know how it works, including even the uprighting bags at the end of the mission. As you know, we announced on the 19th of August that we were establishing Apollo 8 as a manned command and service module flight on Saturn V, number 503, and that the basic mission plan is a Earth orbital mission, which we're prepared to carry out. That we also were preparing and planning to go deeper into space if the progress of the program, by the time that we had to make that decision, would justify our going deeper into space. Accordingly, we have been preparing to conduct missions out to a few thousand miles, or many thousand miles, or circumlunar, or going into lunar orbit. We have much work to do before that decision will be made. We expect that we can accomplish the review of the detailed data, of which we have a great deal now from Apollo 7, complete the ground tests that are necessary to support that decision, complete the checkout and validation of our onboard and ground computer programs, such that we can make that decision by about the middle of November.
You know, yesterday afternoon, Wally, one of the astronauts, said he had a magnificent flying machine. And I guess all of us down on the ground were glad to hear that. And after recovery today and seeing it on the water and seeing the astronaut back on the carrier, I'm inclined to agree with him. We're proud of the spacecraft and what it accomplished. If you want a number, we accomplished 101% of the planned test objectives. I think this is a first in the manned spaceflight program, or perhaps in any space program. We added more into the flight as it progressed. We accomplished everything that we set out to do, added a few more minor objectives, and accomplished those as well. So the official tally is 101%.